Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
It was supposed to just be a one-time bit, but then it became his act for the next 25 years. Say what you want about Tony Starlight, but the man can commit.
And the Can Be Kiwanis Food and Toy Drive is one of the things that makes Can Be special, serving hundreds of families and more than 1,000 local kids each year. We'll give you a glimpse of what it takes to make the magic happen. But first, the news. After months of contentious debate, including an in-depth mediation process and analysis by Oregon Solutions, the legislative resolution to the request to apply for grant funding to extend the runway of the Aurora State Airport was remarkably brief. The Oregon Legislature's Emergency Board's hearing on the matter Friday lasted barely 60 seconds. Here's House Speaker Tina Kotek and Senate President Peter Courtney.
I just want to clarify for everyone, approval of the grant does not mean that we will not have another conversation about this for expenditure limitation. So I just want to make that very clear from the language. And I want to thank this good Senator Johnson and Oregon Solutions for the conversation since the last e-board. So thank you.
Further discussion? Any objections? The recommendation motion has been approved.
In a slightly longer subcommittee hearing the previous day, Oregon Department of Aviation Interim Director Martha Meeker said that the state's approval would be only the start of a long process, one that would involve ample opportunity for public involvement.
And what's important to note is if we receive retroactive approval to seek this grant, it's the beginning of a process, not the end. The project is anticipated to be completed in four phases. The first phase is the environmental phase, and I think that is a very critical phase that we need full public engagement on that, public hearings, and is a very well-run process when we do a full-up NEPA for the runway support.
It also requires the FAA to approve the state's request for $37 million in grant funding, which is no sure thing. Ben Williams, president of Friends of French Prairie, opposes the runway extension. He says Oregon Solutions, which was hired to mediate the dispute, wrote an excellent and very detailed report of the issue and possible ways forward. The problem, he claims, was that the legislature didn't pay any attention to it.
Oregon Solutions, they did what normally would be a six-month assessment process in 6 weeks for the legislature. Mm-hmm. Three interviewers, a whole bunch of staff, and a massive write-up in a very compressed amount of time. Mm-hmm. It probably is a $100,000 exercise.
Yes.
So the legislature signed up for spending $100,000 of taxpayer money, which turned into a complete eyewash because they didn't even deal with the report before they pushed the subcommittee pushed this recommendation for approval forward.
The runway extension is also opposed by Aurora's newly elected mayor, Chris Salee, and many of the residents in the immediate area. Canby Mayor Brian Hodson, however, supports the project along with the Canby business community.
The new traffic signal at Sequoia and Hazeldale, better known as the Fred Meyer intersection, since it's also the primary way in and out of the Fred Meyer complex, could be up and running by fall 2019. City Administrator Rick Robinson says his plan is to have the project out for a bid in the next few months and could be under construction over the summer. The project is desperately needed, Robinson says, with or without the increased traffic expected from the proposed Project Shakespeare, which has not even been cleared through the city's planning process yet. If it's approved, the traffic it generates would represent only 5% of the total capacity at that intersection, which is comparable to the traffic counts from the nearby Sequoia Grove apartment complex. Robinson also says he is proposing the project be paid for through the city's urban renewal funding, since it's not eligible for general funds because the project isn't listed in the transportation system plan. He says the Project Shakespeare developers would be expected to pay a portion of the cost that is roughly equal to the percentage of their usage at that intersection, which is standard policy for the city of Canby. The city will also seek grant funding to help with some of the cost. One other note of interest. This will technically be the city's first stoplight, meaning it is the first signal device built and operated by the city rather than the county or state. That's right, listeners. Canby finally has its first stoplight. 21st century, here we come. Police Beat for November 13th through 19th. On November 13th, at 11:54 a.m., a staff member at Knight Elementary School on North Grant Street reportedly found a small container of marijuana near the playground. An officer took possession and had it destroyed. At 8:30 that night, officers responded to a report of an attempted break-in at a closed business in the industrial park on South Hazeldale Way. Although there was damage to a door, it appeared that the would-be intruder had not gained access and nothing was reported stolen. On November 14th at 10:10 a.m., officers responded to a report of a shooting. However, upon arrival, it was determined that the reporting party was having a mental health crisis. The patient was subsequently transported to a medical facility. On November 15th at 1:26 p.m., police responded to a two-vehicle traffic crash on Southeast 1st Avenue. One of the drivers was issued a citation for following too closely. So remember to stay safe out there, folks. On November 16th at 5:56 p.m., an officer was dispatched to a single-vehicle traffic accident on Knightsbridge Road. Barbara Needley, 76, of Portland, was subsequently arrested for driving under the influence of intoxicants. Finally, on November 18th at 12:31 a.m., police received a report of a vehicle that had been stolen from the parking lot of a restaurant on Southeast 1st Avenue. The owner called later to say, actually, a family member had driven the vehicle home. Whoops!
He did it! After 10 rounds against the greatest cowboys in the world, riding the best bulls modern breeding can produce, Canby's own Chase Doherty has come out on top in the National Finals Rodeo. As the only cowboy with 6 qualified rides heading into the 10th and final go-round Saturday night, all Chase needed to secure the gold buckle in bull riding was a score of any kind, and he delivered. Riding New Frontier Rodeo's Wall Cloud, Chase held on for the 8 seconds and scored an 82.5. It was good for third on the night and another check, his 7th of the finals. Chase leaves Vegas with just over $342,000 in earnings on the season, which puts him second place behind 4-time bull riding world champion Sage Kimsey. We spoke with Chase Sunday. Here's what he had to say. A little tired, I imagine.
Yeah, a little tired, a little sore.
Yeah, yeah, but I bet. That makes sense. So this was your first time qualifying for the NFR. Can you give us some sense of what the experience has been like?
Oh, it's been awesome, honestly. Yeah, it's kind of what I've dreamed about doing ever since I was a little kid.
Oh, I imagine.
I finally get to live the dream out, so.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I'm sure winning was in the dream somewhere. Probably didn't think you'd, you know, even winning the average, probably didn't think you'd get it on your first try, did you?
No. It was definitely my goal coming in here to win the average. That was my main goal. But
yeah,
I mean, I thought that was a long shot in itself. I was pretty surprised.
I bet. I mean, you came in. You were ranked 5th coming in, which was awesome. But first-time qualifier, you're out there against the greatest cowboys in the world, you know, riding the top-ranked bulls. And to have performances like this, you were the only cowboy to score 7 qualified rides. What do you attribute that success to? Anything? Or is it still kind of too much to process?
My family, they've been behind me all the time, helping me out, telling me where to go and how to do it, you know, kind of. I mean, not exactly, but they've definitely played a huge role in it.
For sure.
All my friends, and I mean, I've just had a lot of help, I guess.
For sure. Your father was a professional bull rider as well, John Doherty, and your brother well, Colton, is that right?
Yep, my brother, he was on it. This year was his first year of pro rodeoing, actually. He was on his permit. Actually, a funny story is he won Central Point, Oregon, earlier this year on a bull named Scared Famous, and that's the same bull I won Salinas on later that year, the same year.
Oh, cool. Oh, that's a good bull for your family then. He must like the Doherty boys.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So what's it been like out there? I imagine you've probably met some of those guys just on the pro rodeo circuit and probably gotten to know them pretty well. But is there's a different feel at all being at the NFR? Do you get to know some of the guys better?
We rodeo all year together, and we definitely know each other before we get there and stuff. But no, you learn a whole different level of friendship when you make it to the NFR with those guys. It's just being able to be in the locker room with them and just be around the top guys in the world, that's pretty cool, honestly.
For sure. Yeah,
and just getting to see how they act and how they handle themselves, everything that they do, and then apply it to your own trait,
make it
the way you want it, I guess. I mean, I don't know. It's pretty cool being able to be back there.
For sure. I bet. Did any of those guys, or maybe your family you mentioned that have been supporting you and giving you tips, was there any particular advice that's kind of stayed with you through this 10-day process that you feel like has really kind of stuck out to you as far as helping you along the way?
Yeah, I guess so. Everybody's just telling me to be me. That's the main thing that stuck out.
Yeah, for sure.
Just keep doing what I'm doing. That's what they keep telling me, so...
Well, so tell me about, you won some, you got some checks, you won quite a bit of money from this competition, which is awesome, and a pickup truck, is that right as well?
Yep.
Get a new truck out of the deal?
I won the Top Gun Award, so yeah, it's a brand new Dodge pickup.
That's not bad. I think I might be in the wrong profession here in the podcasting. I should get into bull riding, I think.
Yeah, the good thing I won that because I wasn't quite sure how I was getting home.
Well, there you go. So you got it right home. Do you get it right away?
Now I can get home. Yeah. I got to go pick it up tomorrow.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because you could always ride the pool, but that's only 8 seconds. That doesn't get you too far down the road, does it?
No.
Yeah, well, that's all I wanted to ask. Was just had any final words from you out there in Vegas?
Thanks for calling. I mean,
absolutely.
Great to get in contact with my hometown.
For sure. When are you heading back?
I'll be back in Canby first week in January, actually. I'm going to go back, and I got some friends I'm going to go see and visit for a little bit. So I'll be around there for like a week, and then I got to go down to Texas for rodeos. So,
So just back,
go to Fort Worth and all that.
Just back into the grind.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations, man. It's definitely a great performance, a string of great performances. And like I said, we're all really, really happy for you and really proud. Take care, man. Thank you for talking with us.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
All right, Chase.
It's good talking to you.
You too. Take care.
Hi, Ray Keene here from the Canby Center. Don't let the Grinch sneak up on you this holiday season. If you think someone is thinking about suicide, assume you are the only one who will reach out. Listen to them. Ask directly, are you thinking about suicide? Stay with them. Help them connect to supports such as a doctor, therapist, or emergency room. Call the National Suicide Prevention Hotline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Start a conversation. It could save a life. Brought to you by the Canby Suicide Prevention Task Force.
So I've got a special treat for you guys. My guest today is a Portland legend. He's celebrating his 25th year in show business. The Pacific Northwest, Mr. Christmas, as I call him.
I'll take that.
You'll take that. Tony Starlight, how are you?
Thank you, Frankie. I'm wonderful.
Thank you. What did you think of my intro? I stumbled a little.
But... So far, so good.
Cool. So my first question, Tony, I've been kind of talking to some of your fans in the Canby area and around, and hearing from just everyone across the board, they're clamoring, they're wondering when you're going to get into rap. Is that
coming? Yeah, the demand is there, but the supply will be scarce.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. I always tell everybody I'm right about everything. You know, it's like, listen to me, the things I'm telling you right now. But the one thing I was 100% wrong about is this rap music.
Yeah.
It's a fad.
It's not going to catch
it's
on.
It's never going to last. I mean, you can't take the melody out of music and just have rhythm and some guy talking the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like, would you stop talking?
Yeah.
I want to hear the song.
Yeah.
Where's the song?
Yeah.
I am not the market for rap.
No, you do
and
not.
I don't get it. And it's not just the music. It's also like, you know, I don't, a lot of the subject matter just does not entangle with my life. Mm-hmm. Same way that most, you know, a lot of country western music doesn't entangle and mesh with my life very well.
Right.
So
okay, so it'll still be a while before we see the Tony Starling rap show.
Well, here's one thing: is they can keep buying tickets and coming and just checking, seeing if I'm doing it.
Checking the pulse on that. Are we leaning toward rap? No, not yet. Yeah. Maybe next year.
I've told people for years: the day you see me advertise Tony Starlight salutes the '90s is the day to come shoot me.
Okay. Well, tell me a little about your show. You know, what music does appeal to you, and you've been doing it for some time here, so
somebody said to me that something I thought was somewhat astute is that I sort of peddle in nostalgia. Mm. So I really like the era of the Rat Pack era, including Bobby Darin and Tony Bennett and that, mm-hmm. through the 70s and the mid 80s and a little bit of the 80s. I'm not as crazy about the 80s, but sort of through those two genres. I mean, I do a whole show of Elton John, a whole show of Neil Diamond, and I do a whole show of Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and those things. I really appeal to that age. I always, or that era. I say that I grew up in the 70s, so all that music's in my blood.
Yeah.
But I grew up watching I Love Lucy, wanting to be Ricky Ricardo.
Okay.
So it's like, if you can just imagine.
I was going to say, some of that Rat Pack Golden Years is a little before your time, I feel.
But totally before my time.
You grew up kind of an old soul, it sounds like.
Well, I appealed to it. I mean, I grew up, by the time I was 20, mm-hmm. wanting to do music professionally. I mean, that's when Nirvana was hitting big.
Right.
And they were so angry.
Just grunge everywhere, yeah.
And I was like, I don't understand why the richest generation of human beings who've ever been on this planet are so mad. What are you so mad about? Is it your life expectancy is going to be so long? Well, I'll show you. I'll mess up my life expectancy, which is kind of like sort of a nihilist movement, the grunge thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you look at the people who were popular in it. They don't seem like a happy bunch. And so, anyway, there's something kind of about the angry artist and whatever that I didn't really resonate with. Mm-hmm. And I found...
We should say, too, you were born in, or grew up in Grand Rapids, right?
Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was only there for about 8 years, so I don't remember much of it. Then we moved to Hood River. So I spent most of my life in Hood River and in Oregon.
Gotcha.
In Montana. I went to high school out there.
Oh, interesting.
And
big grunge scene in Montana?
Huge. Well, now. It's always a little late there.
Right.
They're just getting
They're
it
just
now.
Getting cell phones, isn't it?
Yeah, when we used to have a kid move to our school from California, this is pre-internet, of course, it was always as if they had transported from the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd heard of bands we've never heard of. Right. They're wearing clothes that, what are Vans? What are those? What are those checkered shoes? Where did you get those?
Right. Yeah, that's cool. So you were telling, tell me about where Tony Starlight came from.
So I was not sure what to do with music because kind of music that I wanted to do. First of all, I wasn't as good a songwriter as I should have been, or a singer, mm-hmm. as I should have been. And but I still loved music, and what I really liked was making people laugh and entertain. So I've kind of, a lot of my shows become much more comedic in nature. And as I was making people laugh around work, and I was working at a restaurant, and two of the guys there had a band, a jazz band.
Yeah.
And they said, you ought to come down sometime and sing with us, like, because I was just getting
cook,
into the
right?
Sinatra. Yeah, I was a cook at Virginia Cafe.
Yeah.
And I was singing the whole time, you know, and singing Sinatra style stuff.
They said, you're cooking?
Yeah, absolutely. Pass the time. And I get down.
Cool.
They said, why don't you come put on like a powder blue tuxedo, ruffles, and just do like a Bill Murray send-up from the old Saturday Night Live, and we'll call you Tony Starlight or something.
So it was designed as a parody.
I was just absolutely, plucked out of the kitchen and just put into this position. And so I thought, well, this would be fun. And so I went, and, you know, we did a 5-song set and put a few little jokes in it, but it was mostly just done as campy as, you know, born free, as campy and ridiculous as possible. But the audience really responded well. And I said, well, this is what I need to do. So then I started writing material specifically for this trio. I was with Ralph Huntley, who still works around Portland, a great musician.
Did you draw a lot of it from kind of the Bill Murray and other people?
Oh, yeah. Kind of started there. And then, you know, looking, you know, finding the worst of Don Ho was just a horrible, he had a horrible act.
Yeah.
But a lovely, horrible act. And
love to hate.
Yeah. And just, well, you know, there was a time when you could go to a Holiday Inn and there would be somebody singing really
lounge
cheesy.
Singers, yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of died out. And I got to see the end of it in the 80s. And you go to a piano bar and people would sing around the piano. Or there'd be a singing piano player and they put a lot of that kind of ethic of the old lounges into their delivery. Uh-huh. A little over dramatic, a little over cool.
Yeah.
And I just loved it. And I mean, at the time, I was very sarcastic about it. Mm-hmm. But I grew to really just love what I do and found it as a great vehicle to work my humor into. Because being stand-up comedian's tough. You tell a joke and then nobody laughs and then you got to move to the next joke. So what I do is when nobody laughs, then I move on to a song.
Yeah.
Then maybe they're ready for a joke again.
Right.
So
right. You have one extra tool that a stand-up comedian does not have.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you're kind of known for your holiday show. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, so I love Christmas because of the music. And so people, like a lot of people love Halloween. Halloween's not as exciting to me because, there's Monster Mash and then what?
Yeah.
The theme from the Munsters. There's just not that, but there's this amazing collection of music.
Yeah.
And so not just the classics that were sung by like Dean Martin and Sinatra and Bing Crosby, of course, but those old holiday specials by Rankin and Bass, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Frosty the Snowman, Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
That people kind of think of as kids' music. Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we do a bunch of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I do, you know, the Burgermeister Meisterburger. You know, it's a difficult responsibility.
I was hoping you'd give us a sample.
And, a little early in the day.
Yeah.
And I get to do a ton of characters. I get to do Louis Armstrong. You know, is that you, Santa Claus? And I get to do Jimmy Durante. And there's so many different characters related to Christmas music, too. So kind of took like all my pop culture things that I like and just blended them together in the proportions that I like.
Yeah.
And the thing also about Christmas is so you can put a lot of messages of togetherness and family and you know, brotherly love. And there's just tons of places for jokes and all that and memories, bringing back people's memories. And we've kind of become a tradition. This is our 12th year doing it as it is now.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I mean, you know, I've people send me an email and say, you know, when are the shows? Because my parents are coming and they want to be sure that their visit times up with your shows.
Yeah.
That means the world to me.
Sure.
And to see people come back over and over and come back with friends and to... And people will say, you know, it's been a rough year and I wasn't really in the mood and I was brought here by my company party or a friend gifted us this. And I got to tell you, I'm just so excited about the holidays and you've really lifted my spirits. I mean, that is really why you do this business.
So, Tony, you've been doing this for 25 years.
Yeah.
Here in Portland, you've kind of got your niche up here. But a few weeks ago, finally got your big lucky break. You were able to play Canby. So what was
that? Yes, it's like a dream realized. Last time I played in Canby, it was just singing at the church, Maxburg Lutheran Church.
Yeah, you have a connection there.
Yeah, that's where my stepfather, John Ide, he was the pastor out there for, I want to say, 15 years. Might have been 20 years.
That's cool.
And yeah, they lived at the parsonage right next door to that there. And of course, between, you know, I was married to my wife in that church there.
Oh, cool.
And had a lot of the church members help making cakes and helping with the getting photography done. And, you know, a young couple on a budget.
Yeah.
On a bad lounge singer's salary. And so we have some deep connections there. It was kind of funny because I played the Canby Wedding Chapel, and I have my stepdad there, and he's been about 5 years retired, maybe 4 years retired from the church there. And, like, he was the biggest celebrity in Canby, you know, which I loved seeing.
Yeah.
And I had a beautiful, beautiful time. And the people at Canby were so nice and appreciative. And there's, it's funny, you know, there's people with streets named after them in Canby.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Cracksburgers.
Right.
They're like real people.
I know.
I know them.
Yeah. 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 I love the Highway 99 E's. That's a great Canby family. right through the high Canby.
Oh!
I got jokes too,
Tony.
You
got the best joke of the day.
Was there anything sort of especially special or unique about the Canby show that maybe you were able to do something different or were forced
well,
to do something
yeah,
different?
Yeah, I did. What was kind of fun is, so it's not a big room, and I decided not to bring a drummer out there, so decided to do, I did with piano, bass, and guitar, which kind of, and we played a little bit quieter, which forced us to do kind of a little different show. So I decided to do, and everybody's up so close.
Yeah, it is.
So I decided to do a little more intimate show of songs and stories. So I kind of went through a lot of the different musicians that I grew up listening to and liked, and with little stories behind why I liked one or one that had a particular relationship to my life, and was able to, you know, tell stories. Like, remember the old VH1 Storytellers that they used to have? I loved that show.
Yeah.
Where you get somebody like Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson's one of my favorite episodes. And I'm not even big fans of either of them.
Right, but just
to hear them tell the stories behind the songs and sing them. And so I started doing my Neil Diamond show like that occasionally.
Yeah.
And I had some woman come up to me and just tell me how much that appealed to her, hearing stories behind the songs and stories of how those songs you know, meant to my personal life in particular, but that just kind of weaving a narrative. So then, you know, the evening just becomes more like a play or a story. There's a, you know, there's a narrative that weaves through. And so I did that there, and I'm planning on doing some more out there. I've gotten a phone call from the woman who Marilyn, who runs the place, and I just have not had time. And then, of course, I lost my phone, which let's put a little bookmark in that.
Yes, I want to hear that
story. I haven't been able to call anybody back for a few days. So I'm planning on doing a series out there, and we'll probably do the same kind of thing, songs and stories, but I'll stick to maybe a couple different genres. So maybe I'll do songs and stories about Rat Pack era songs, and then I'll get out there and I'll do songs and stories about like 70s songs.
Yeah.
Or I might do a Neil Diamond one or an Elton John one.
All sounds great.
Or maybe a set of Neil Diamond, a set of Elton John. Well,
that'd be great. We need some more music down there. That'd be awesome.
So, they do.
Yeah.
They do. Especially my brand.
Yes. So you emailed me earlier today and you were just like, hey, I'm running late. It's going to be this different time and I don't have my phone. And I'm like, I think Tony Starlight's been kidnapped. I need to call the police. So you said they got thrown in a river or something.
Yeah, well, so I live out on the water on Multnomah Channel out in Skepoos, and I look out at Sovie Island.
Yeah.
And I've been out there 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and I guess I've lost the bet, because I bet my wife was going to be the first one to lose her phone overboard,
right.
Because she's not nearly as anal as I am about it. I'm very meticulous about
your phone.
I zip up my pockets when I walk out onto the deck, except for apparently I don't do that Tuesday night.
Okay.
So I was coming in, walking down the dock.
The one time.
And I didn't have my button, my pockets zipped, and I did some sort of jostling with my bags, and I heard this bang, splash.
Be honest, you were practicing your Neil Diamond.
Oh, I don't want to wake up the neighbors.
Okay, so it hit the dock? That was
hit
the
bang?
Hit
the dock, and then hit the splash, and I was like, oh no. That could only be one of two things. And my wallet would have been worse, actually.
Yeah?
Oh, because the phone is all backed up on the iCloud. I have insurance. I'm without a phone for a few days, but it cost me $150 deductible.
Right.
But I'm getting a new phone.
Right.
And by the time I log in, like everything except for maybe the last 10 pictures I took will be gone.
Right.
My wallet would have been like, cancel this card, cancel that card. Oh, I need a new... I need a new proof of insurance and all the stuff that's in there. So it was all right, but it's funny. So I lost the bet that my wife was going to be the first one to lose the phone overboard.
I bet she was psyched. Yeah.
She felt a little bit, well, actually my wife's not that way.
No.
All she felt was sympathy for me.
Oh,
she's
good.
Sweet.
What a sweetie.
Yes.
Last question for you. You started to talk about this just as far as your music and down in Canby, you know, your brand of music. You obviously, you know, kind of have more of those classic songs, but
I know, especially with your holiday show, you see a full range of ages and whatnot.
Oh, God, yeah.
I bet you you find that even folks maybe more my age is like, that's not my thing. You know, that whatever, their parents force them to come out or their date makes them come or whatever, they find that they enjoy it, I would think.
They absolutely do. There's some things that translate. So when I do a bunch of characters, first of all, character voices, and I'm very physically animated, that can just be entertaining whether you know what the reference is or not.
Right, you know,
it's like... kind of equate that to you watch an episode of The Simpsons and there's a bunch of references you catch and you go, I'm so smart, I caught that reference. But there was 10 that you missed.
Right.
But you still enjoy the show.
Still enjoying it, yeah.
So they'll enjoy references they get. I put some jokes in for them. I do have a nice thing where I skewer millennials, which makes the old people happy.
We're very sensitive, Tony. You know this.
Yes. And then, exactly. And then I wind up blaming your, you know, your fragile disposition on my generation.
I'm so glad
soundly.
We got to this at the end. I'd have to walk out. So.
Well, I got your participation trophy that I'll give you at the end of this.
Okay, good.
And
a sticker.
Yeah.
Popsicle.
Well, but it's my generation is the one that created the millennials this way because my generation is the neediest generation that ever lived. Like, the thought of our children not absolutely loving us, you know, is just too much for us to bear.
Right.
It's like... we complain about you all being fragile. Right. We're the fragile ones because we can't handle our kids being mad at us.
Yeah. This is good too because I don't think us millennials have ever thought to blame our parents for the way that we are. So this is a good ammunition. I'm glad that you're sharing this.
It rests squarely on their shoulders.
The next millennial meeting, I'm going to share this. So.
Absolutely.
Moving into our next segment here, you are insane and you hear birds talking to you.
Absolutely. Well, people say, you know, birds have never talked to me. I'm like, have you started a conversation with a bird?
Right, you have to start.
You have to initiate. You think they're just going to go, they have to know you're one of them.
You are an amateur, in addition to being an entertainer and a singer and a failed songwriter, as you mentioned, you are an amateur ornithologist.
Yes, exactly. I put birds to sleep before surgery.
And you started this amazing, how many years has it been going, the calendar?
This is the second year of the calendar,
okay.
And it's sort of the prototype for the coffee table book. I call it Conversations with Birds.
It's hilarious.
I love it. I take pictures of birds, and I have conversations with them. And
Will you read a couple?
Yeah, for sure.
So, and there's a website that has some samples on it. What's the website?
Tony Starlight Birds. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that.
There you go.
So one of the ones that I think, some of them go better if I read them out loud because they have character voices,
yes, in fact. Yeah.
So, like, this one's a musical one, so it might be better, you know, this is March.
Mm-hmm.
The bird's a dark-eyed junco. I met him over at Mount Tabor Park.
It's a songbird, it looks like.
Yes, it is. He's singing right there. This is right in the peak of the strutting his stuff trying to attract a lady.
Beautiful shot.
And so I come by, and this is what he's singing. And by the way, American coot is a kind of bird.
Okay. Is that some background we're going to need? Okay.
Yeah. And he's like, American coot, stay away from me. American coot, mama, let me be. And then I say, guess who? Huh? Guess who sings American Woman? I'm not going to fall for that. I know who sang the song. Darn it. It's a great song, and you sing it well. Much obliged. American coot, stay away from me. I have a suggestion. How about singing American Robin? Why? Better still, American Widgeon. I like coot. Well, the original's American Woman, and Widgeon sounds more like woman.
Yeah.
The original was sung by a person. This one is for a bird. But Widgeon and woman both have... they both start with W, and both have only two syllables. Do you have feathers? Huh? I said, do you have feathers? No. Well, maybe you should stay out of bird business. Well, maybe you shouldn't sing people songs. But I like people songs. And I like offering unsolicited advice. Fair enough. I'll scrap coot. Thank you. American doofus, stay away from me. That's nice.
A mean bird. I agree with the hypothetical human on that one.
One of my favorite ones here is we have a chirp, which is a little
bird.
Bit of a... It's the equivalent of Yelp for birds.
Uh-huh.
And they're reviewing this feeder. Okay. You see, the green feeder.
Love it.
It's got 3.5 stars, 25 reviews.
Mm.
One of my favorite reviews here is from Patty Goldfinch. She gave it 3 stars. Food and drink perfect, but no signs for the restroom. I felt foolish flying around looking all over. Waitress said I could just go anywhere. Anywhere? I guess it's authentic bird culture, but I prefer a nice clean restroom.
It's almost like you have some experience with maybe unfair online reviews.
Oh, people
to share their
people just love to share their point of view.
Uh-huh.
Let's see if I give you one more here.
Yeah.
Oh, here's one kind of about the holidays.
Oh, cool.
This is October.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big picture of a raven that
Beautiful.
I took at Long Beach, Washington.
Beautiful.
And I, of course, start the conversation as usual.
Once upon a minute. No.
Yeah. I'll try to do different voices this time. I realize I use my own voice back and forth. It's probably confusing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's.
All right. So this is me. Have you ever seen It's a Wonderful Life? Here we go again. Huh? I have no interest in seeing people movies. Well, that's just the thing. It doesn't have just people in it. It stars Jimmy the Raven. He was in like 600 films or something. So I've heard. But it's hardly a starring role. Granted. He's like in the background, here and there, hopping along the desk at Bailey Building and Loan. How would you know? Or sitting on Uncle Billy's shoulder, who, by the way, is the biggest idiot in the whole film. I thought you hadn't seen it. A raven. A sidekick to an incompetent drunk. So you have seen it? Jimmy should have held out for a better role, like Brandon Lee's in The Crow, which should have been called The Raven, by the way. Crows run in gangs, not exactly the vigilante types who would avenge the death of their slain girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
I'm speechless. Crows are wimps. I could disembowel a crow with one wing tied behind my back. What happened to I have no interest in seeing people movies? The birds. Now that's a movie.
Love it. I think I agree with the Raven in that one. I'm surprised it didn't go Game of Thrones either.
Beautiful. So we got 12-month stories, pictures.
I love the photos. I think the conversations are so funny. And you're legit, you know, sharing some science in there. You know, sprinkled in with the jokes and
yes,
stuff. You really do learn something about each individual species.
Try to work it in. And so, yeah, I've actually given bird presentations at a couple different bird festivals. I'd like to do more of it, but as you can imagine, there's not like a bunch of agents lined up to book that.
Book.
So what I need to get is my book published, and then you get a little more on the radar.
This
my
was
pleasure.
So much fun.
Thank you.
It was just really great. I was really excited about this and really great to hear kind of more of your process and glad to hear you're planning more stuff in Canby. That'd be awesome.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, let's go to TonyStarlight.com. You'll find out. I'm hoping for February, March, April, maybe a show a month or maybe every other month, but starting in February or March.
Cool, cool. Well, when we hear about it, we'll put it out there for you.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks again.
Sharon, I'm Tyler.
Hi.
Good to meet you.
Hey, Tyler. I see your things on Canby now.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoy
the
podcast.
Yes,
we
sir.
Help get toys and food to about 1,700 people in Canby in a 24-hour period of time.
What it is it's a community thing. I mean, we couldn't do this without it's a Canby thing.
Right.
And I wish more people could see. I mean, we've got some people here today that said, I've got to come and see this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Domino's donated a bunch of pizza or at a reduced rate.
Right.
And they just brought that. Some of these people have been working for days, sorting toys and getting things organized. We've got, I think we're about 375 families at least.
Wow.
And, you know, over 1,000 kids, I would think, by now.
Yeah.
And we do not turn anybody away, but we do have our applications out for over a month, and so the people have filled them out, and we can help them better than we can somebody just walking in today.
Sure.
But if anybody did need something and they did walk in, you guys would have something.
We're making some of them come back at 4 to 5 tonight.
I see.
So we can get stuff ready, because all the other families that applied, if they have children, their toys are all packed already.
Right.
Ready for them to arrive.
So now, Sharon, Tony was saying that you've been doing this for a while. How long have you been doing this?
Oh, I don't know. I can't even... 20 years, probably.
Okay. Yeah. And has it always been like this, or has it evolved over the years?
Well, it's evolved because we now have a place to be.
Okay. That's great.
The partnership with
the Camby
Fairgrounds and the Event Center here has just been outstanding. It's given us a permanent home for this event. And furthermore, the staff here has just been very accommodating. What we see here today is just the climax of the food and toy drive, because for the past month, you know, we've been receiving donations all throughout the community. And then the food and toys that are collected during that campaign, the food is brought here, it's stored in the rabbit barn, the toys are taken upstairs, and they're all kept secure here.
Right.
And then in the past week, and we've organized work parties to come in and sort the food, and eventually box the food and get it ready for the specific families who'll be receiving it today and tomorrow.
Right.
Simultaneous to all of this, Santa's helpers in the toy workshop, they've been organizing the toys by age and gender, and then each family that registers gives us a profile of their family, and so we know that maybe they have 3 children, a 7-year-old girl, a 5-year-old boy, and a 3-year-old boy.
Right.
And so then those toys are arranged specifically for that family. So
That's great. The
children in that family get something nice for Christmas.
It sounds like a logistical nightmare, but it's really cool to see that you guys are able to kind of perfect
it. Well,
and
every year it gets better.
Right.
And our process, we know, we already have some ideas for next year. It'll make it even better because it starts...
Conveyor belts,
We start at noon, but people start arriving at 11.
Right.
And we try to get them in, make them feel welcome, cocoa, cookies, tea, coffee, anything. You know, the purpose is to make them feel valued
and welcome.
And,
yes.
And then tomorrow, I don't know what you're doing tomorrow, but tomorrow morning is amazing too. We have drivers that show up about 7:30, and the ones that aren't picked up today, which will be quite a few, the drivers come. There's scouts, there's community people, there's people that don't even live in Camby.
Yeah.
And they say how many they can take, and we get the food and the toys together, and they take them out, and in a couple hours, everything's delivered.
Yeah, it's out
by noon tomorrow. It will appear. It'll appear that we were never here.
Right.
Well, almost.
Yes.
So a big question that I would have is, how does someone get involved with this process, like for next year? Or
you mean get involved to help, or get involved
to help? To help. Well, both actually.
Well,
but I mean, for me, I'd love
on
to help
our website.
Next year.
Yeah. Well, it's in the Camby Herald.
Uh-huh.
Our work party schedule. It's on our website. It's on our Kiwanis Facebook page. As soon as we figure out what to do, how we're going to do it.
Right.
County Fair Rodeo Board
showed up. Oh, the Rodeo
up,
Board.
You know, all the rodeo
guys
showed up.
We have scout groups, and we have church groups, and we have families with little kids that can sort out the corn from the beans. You know, I mean, there's just that stuff going on.
And I think it's important, too, because you always hear about, let's go help out at the soup kitchen or something. I didn't know if Camby had a soup kitchen. But now that I know that this is a thing, this is something that you can do in the holidays that really means something, and you're touching people's lives for the holidays.
Right.
You do it as...
I'd love to speak to that, because my own family, we during the past week as we were prepping for today, I had 4 generations of my family all here working side by side. You know, my mom at 85, she shows up and she works. She packs the food boxes just like everybody else. Then my wife and I are here. Our children are here, and our grandchildren as well.
That's
and they've been participating for a number of years, many years. But as we get ready for the holidays, this is what we're talking about at home.
Right.
You know, all of my family, they okay, when do you need us? You know, when can we be there? What can we do? This just becomes the focus.
Yeah.
What I can also extend from that, that's just one family's experience, but this then becomes the community's experience.
Sure.
And this is just one of those ways that I've proclaimed Cambie is a special place. And
I agree with
and,
that.
And this is one way that that special part of our being who we are here in Cambie, Oregon, is manifested,
yeah.
is with our annual food and toy
drive.
And
we could not do it without this community. I mean, Kiwanis couldn't do this.
Yeah.
I mean, just Kiwanis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get it going, but it's like the businesses, we get some donations, some pretty large donations from some businesses that every year give us a couple $1,000s. And so, you know, it's just all the different parts of the community that come together.
That's so great.
It is. It's just heartwarming, you know. So
over here you see a gathering of Builders Club students from Baker Prairie Middle School, and then I think we also have some Key Club students from Cambie High
School. I don't
think
they're here. I don't think the Key Club.
And so they're here for the duration of the day helping out as well.
Yeah, some of the older ones have been working since 11 this morning, are getting tired, you know.
Well, yeah. And I know from personal experience how important it is, like in middle school, to start helping out with these things, because Mr. Crawford was my teacher in middle school, teaching me all about this. So
one of those things that applied to you know our situation in school, you know, at Ackerman Middle School, I remember we talked often about how when we lift up all of those around us, we discover we lift ourselves.
Yeah,
and. The same thing applies here in the adult world with Cambie Kiwanis and with our community as a whole, that we all make this discovery that as we lift up all of those around us, we lift ourselves as well.
It's absolutely wonderful.
You know, it's very rewarding.
Is there anything else before I close this out? Is there anything else that you guys want to throw out to Cambie and the listeners of our show?
Just a huge thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. You know, this goes to everyone who maybe made a single contribution, you know, at one of the barrels around town. You know, maybe somebody put a toy that's just going to, you know, make you know, Christmas a great day for some child out there that they don't even know. This morning I was showing someone who made a small contribution. She wrote a $25 check, and I was showing her, well, here's what your $25 bought.
That's so cool.
Three hams, and there's going to go one in each box here, so three families are going to enjoy a ham, you know, with their holiday meal, and you made that happen.
That's awesome.
You know?
And we had this one lady that sent us $400 and said, I used to go out and shop myself, and she wrote a letter to our club, and she said, but I'm 86 or whatever. Now she said, 200 goes for toys and 200 goes for food, and you know.
Yes, it's wonderful. So a huge thank you
to the community.
All those many, many people who, you know, contributed to help make this a reality for those in our community.
Awesome. Sharon, thank you so much for your time. And Tony, thank you so much for
Tyler, your time. Thank you. And thank you for the podcast. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you very much.
And that's our show. Thanks to our special guest today, Tony Starlight and the Cambie Kiwanis. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
Christmas is just around the corner, and we thought it appropriate to sit down with an actual elf. Linda Tate joins on our next episode to tell us about her personal mission to read and answer letters to Santa from local kids. I know my kids have been asking for a brand new Ford Mustang. We'll see if Linda can deliver.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @CambieNow, or on our website, CambieNowPod.com.